I remember the Depression quite well, but in a way we were lucky. I lived on a farm in Iowa, mm-hmm. a farm family. There were six children and my mother and dad. And so we never had to worry about food. We had to worry about money, because at that time we didn't own the farm. We had to pay rent. And there just wasn't, you weren't getting any money for your crops, like 10 cents a bushel for corn and right. and things like that. But as far as the eating, there was plenty of that, you know, for us. Mm-hmm. And specific cost, average price for groceries. It was about maybe 3 cents for a loaf of bread. Mm-hmm. I can remember, although we didn't buy bread, we baked our own.
You never went to the grocery store?
Very seldom. The only thing we ever got from the grocery store was once in a while some fruit. Mm-hmm. You know, like we raised our own apples and things, but like at Christmas time we'd get oranges or bananas from the grocery store, but and sugar and flour. But outside of that, we raised everything on the farm.
Did you have animals on your farm?
Oh, yeah. The farms in Iowa are very big, and like 500 acres maybe, you know. And yeah, and we all had lots of chores to do, and mm-hmm. and that. And I was the oldest of the six children, so I generally had to help in the house. And we went to a one-room school. Yeah. And you always had what you called a director of the school district, and my father was the director. Mm-hmm. So that meant that the teacher stayed at our home during the week.
Okay.
We'd have to go to this other town and pick her up on Sunday night, and then she stayed with the family of whoever was the director of the school. And then you took her back on Friday. And I got out of, I graduated from eighth grade when I was, well, I started high school when I was 12.
Wow.
Went through all the grades and you know, that other number of years.
How many students were in the one-room school?
Oh, probably 17 or 18 of them, and six of them were my own family. Uh-huh. And this one teacher taught all the grades.
Groups.
Uh-huh. And then I went to high school, and I graduated from high school when I was 15 and a half.
All 4 years?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What
mm-hmm.
was the high school?
Well, it was regular high school, mm-hmm. you know, like most every place else had at that time. But I had got through the country school through eighth grade so early that I got through high school early.
Was that common for women to go all the way through high school and grade school?
Oh, yeah. You'd go through that, but you didn't. During the Depression, there just wasn't any money to go on to college.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was any money to go on to college, generally the boys got to go.
Right.
I had a brother next to me, and he went to college. But in high school, a girl could take training to be a secretary, or you could take teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd go away to a college maybe a year. Well, they could teach in the country schools without going away. You could graduate from high school and go out and teach in the country. And so, but I took a secretarial course, and I wasn't old enough when I got through high school, so I went to work in a drugstore. And they used to have restaurants in drugstores.
Mm-hmm.
And most of your pharmacists in the drugstores, I'm getting way off of what you were asking.
That's
here.
Okay, yeah.
And most of the pharmacists in the drugstores had some kind of, they either made capsules of medicine or something. The druggist I worked for, he had a patent on a flu medication. So when we weren't waiting tables, we had to go there and fill these capsules with this flu medication. And then if somebody came in and wanted wallpaper, you sold wallpaper in the drugstore.
The drugstores had everything?
Had everything like that. And so I think I made $5 a week there, and it cost me $3 for a room in town. I did get my meals at the restaurant in the drugstore.
How far was town from your house?
5 miles, but kids didn't have cars then.
Right.
You were lucky the family had one. And so then I was lucky, though, when I was a little over 16, I used to have what you call farm program offices. Mm-hmm. And it was a government office. And I did get to go to work there when I was a little over 16. And I worked there till I was 18.
As a secretary?
Uh-huh. And I had good grades in it in high school. So, mm-hmm. And then we used to take what you called civil service tests. I don't know. The government still gives them, but since the government isn't hiring, they're probably not giving them now. Right. You know. But that used to be what you wanted to take and get into, because then you could work and you'd be contributing toward a pension and everything.
And were there good benefits working with the government?
Yes, then? Yes. And so I went to California because there were no civil service jobs right around there. So I went to California and stayed with a cousin. And then, I'm trying to think, the day World War II started, and on December 7th, then about a week later, I got called and was transferred to Washington, D.C. to work for the Navy.
Uh-huh.
So, this was all while I was young, you know.
Right. How old were you when you transferred over?
Oh, I can't remember.
16, 17?
Well, I went to California when I was about 17 and a half, because I wasn't quite old enough to work under the Civil Service yet.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got out there and could, then I got transferred when war was declared.
Do you remember Pearl Harbor?
Oh, yes, yes.
Do you remember exactly where you were when you
I was down in Chinatown in Los Angeles. We'd gone to church and we'd gone down there to look around, and we couldn't believe it when we heard it. And I remember that very well. And then I went to work for the Navy in Washington, D.C. And every day I would have to walk by this recruiting office.
Mm-hmm.
And one night I just thought, I'm going to join the service. My dad had been in World War I.
Uh-huh.
And so I walked in and joined.
Which branch did you join?
The Army.
The Army?
Women's Army Corps. You know, that's all there was. That was the first one. Yeah. And
the first one that accepted women?
That was the first women's army unit. Okay. It was called the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps. It was an auxiliary to the men's army.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, the Navy had the Waves, and then there was the Spars and different ones, but the Army was the first one. That was the only, it was never available before World War II. It was brand new.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this year is the 50th year. We're having our 50th reunion this year. Right, it started in May of 1942. And I joined in June, I guess it was. I was in the first group to go from Washington, D.C.
How did your family feel about that?
Well, my mother was real nervous about it, but my dad, he was happy that I joined it. And my sister joined, too, later. And I had two brothers in, too, so there were four of us in.
Four out of the six?
Mm-hmm. And But my training, the only place they trained you then was in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
So I was sent back there to be trained. And then sent down to Florida and shipped out in January of 43 for Africa. And we were the first company to go over. There were 191 of us.
And what was your duties?
I was secretary over there. I was secretary to the officers who planned invasions. It was a very secretive, good job. There were 12 of us on that. And we were known as the Silent 12 because we didn't tell. We couldn't tell anybody what we were doing. And when in the first company it went over, you were either a secretary or you were a cook or you were a driver. They drove Jeeps, a lot of the women did.
Mm-hmm.
They were the drivers for the high-ranking military men. And two of my girlfriends were General Eisenhower's drivers. And I was secretary for quite a while. And then we went to Italy about a year and a half later.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was made a first sergeant, which is the highest rank for a non-commissioned officer. I wasn't an officer, non-commissioned officer. And I had a company of women who handled all the mail. We were a postal company, and we handled all the mail for the injured, and the soldiers who were killed took care of all that. Mm-hmm. We took care of all that mail. And I did that till I came home. About 3.5 years I was
over. Were you ever close to battle?
Oh, yeah. We were not that far behind them.
Mm-hmm.
I met my husband over. I met him in Africa, and we were married in Italy.
While the war was there?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's how I ended up here. He was from here.
Oh, okay.
That's how I ended up here. I should have gone to your questions to see what I got you all mixed up now. I started out in the Depression and... Okay, so we got that. The WAC. It later became WAC when we became part of the Army. Mm-hmm. That was 9 months after we were overseas, right. I was first sergeant, and I was in Africa and Italy. When did you see battle? Well, I really didn't see battle.
Heard it, huh?
Yeah, women didn't fight, you know. What do you remember most about the military service? Well, the great people I met and the good friends and I'm going to have to think a little more about some of those things there. Saddest thing that happened, we lost some of our girls over there. That was always sad. And most rewarding thing that happened.
Did you receive any awards?
Yes, I've got, oh dear. Think what they are. I'm in here, not. You know, you forget over the years what they're all called. You don't. Let's see here. I can. Maybe you want to shut off a minute, do you, while I find. While in the service, I received the Meritorious Service Plaque, the European, African, Middle Eastern Service Medal, with one bronze service star, good conduct medal, victory medal, and the WAC service ribbon. I'll let you copy those down so that you get them spelled right. Okay? Let's see what.
What was your husband in that war? Was he just.
He was a captain. He was in. Oh shoot, what am I going to say? Security.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had been in the infantry when he first went in, but then later on he was in security. And that was quite a job too, because, you know, you didn't know who to trust.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, what did you think you were fighting for? We were fighting for our country to not be taken over by the enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the enemy? Well, it was the Italians and the Germans. Mm-hmm. Over there where I was. How have your war experiences changed your life? They've made me be thankful for everything good that happens, and it, you see people that gripe about a lot of silly things. Mm-hmm. That they shouldn't even think about griping about, because they have it so good here that if they only knew how the other half lives.
Right.
You know, and it has made me really appreciate all the good things that have happened to me, and it's been a very rewarding experience to have been in it. Even though I couldn't go to college, I felt I really got an education from mm-hmm. being in the service and all the people I met and the people I worked with. And General Eisenhower, who later became President Eisenhower, right, is the one that was responsible for us 191 being over there. He insisted that he wanted to try bringing the women over and see how it would work out so that the men could leave their desk jobs and go to the front, mm-hmm. or, you know, could go into battle and the women could do the office work. And so for 5 months we were the only women over there before they brought any more over, because we had to prove that we were a help to them. And he was the boss of all of us, really, and we were assigned to these different things and different jobs that he wanted us to do. And the girls did a lot in the driving area.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big thing too. Where did you live? Oh, that was on the home front. Over there we lived in a convent.
Oh, did you?
I gotta show you. Yeah, here's how we got our water. This was a well out mm-hmm. in the yard, and this horse walked around all day long to bring the water up from the well into this thing.
There
here.
Are a lot of nuns then, huh?
Oh yeah, nuns and orphans.
Was that Catholic?
Mm-hmm. And that's where we lived.
And we had to cook outside. The cooks had to, they had these gas, it'd be something like a camping stove.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they cooked on. But they had to cook out in a courtyard because so many of the buildings over there are built around a courtyard. And then every morning about time they get the stoves going good, the Germans would come over to bomb Algiers because Algiers was a seaport city. And that's where the ships came in and brought the supplies for the soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And the city is built on a hill. And everything is white. And so when the Germans would come down to bomb the ships, and when they would get ready to leave, they would dump all their ammunition on the way out, you know. And so that was near enough to the battle.
Right.
More than once I dived in a ditch on the, we had to walk to work part of the time, and
mm-hmm.
dived in a ditch to keep from, you know, getting strafed with bullets.
Right.
And so it was a scary time.
Were there always soldiers around?
Well, there were the guards.
Mm-hmm.
The guards were always around. And but out at, there were a lot of guards out at this place that I worked for, these officers that planned the invasion. That was quite a ways from the convent here. We had to walk part way, and then we were picked up by English lorries,
mm-hmm.
their vans, and so that nobody knew where we were doing this work at, because all these big generals were coming in for their input on how to, you know, run the invasions. And so I met, you know, I knew most of the big generals that were in the service, because they came in, like Patton and Montgomery and different ones that came in from the field to put their input into what needed to be done.
And you worked, General Eisenhower was your own?
No, he was not. I worked for another general at this place. General Eisenhower was the one who asked for the whole 191 women. He was the supreme commander of the whole Eastern Theater of Operations. And, but we all knew him.
Mm-hmm.
He, when we had our first reunion out in Hot Springs, Arkansas, he was over in Formosa on some kind of a trip. And he knew we were having our first reunion, and he called us from there. So he was a nice man, really nice. I've kind of rattled on here. You're going to have time putting this together.
That's all right.
Yeah, I told you what I was doing in Pearl Harbor, where we live. How old were you when the war was over? What? About 20 something.
You don't have to end.
No, those were all during home. We wanted to probably want to go back here to the... you had some more questions here you wanted. Women, did you... Oh, I joined after the war started because it wasn't in existence
mm-hmm.
then. Were there many other... Yes, there were a lot of women joined later on.
After yours?
Yeah. Well, they were joining all the time when mm-hmm. we went overseas, but they didn't go over right away.
You were just the first
What encouraged me was, I guess I just always... I always felt patriotic, and I'd always been proud my father was in World War I, and it was
mm-hmm.
just seemed the thing to do. And I told you here about the women doing the office duties and driving the Jeeps. And they weren't cooks for any of the men's company. They were just cooks for our
mm-hmm.
own company. But that, what was your monthly salary? When I went in, it was $21. $21 a month. That's all the men got too.
Oh, you were paid the same.
We were paid the same with the men. That looks like that was military there. So here we were paid the same amount, and I don't remember exactly when it was that the pay scale changed. It changed for the men too.
Mm-hmm.
But it was sometime after we'd been overseas before it was changed.
Was that quite uncommon for men and women to receive equal pay?
Well, on the job, on other public jobs, you didn't. But once,
mm-hmm.
but in the service, it was.
Right.
It rise because the women received the same as the men if they had the same rank.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is one place where that does happen.
Well, that is nice to know.
Yeah.
Do you remember going back to like being at home? Do you remember? Did your family have a car?
Yeah. We had a We had a Model A Ford. Well, I learned to drive on a Model T. I don't know if you know what they are, but they're the ones you used to crank them.
Mm-hmm.
You had to get out and crank them. And I remember when I learned to drive, my we had just got through shocking oats. And my dad took the car out in the field, and he said, come on, you're going to learn to drive. And he cranked it up, and it was about a 100-acre field, so there's shocks all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, now I want you to drive clear down at the other end and don't hit any of these shocks. And that's how I learned to drive. But we had a car.
Were you one of the only families in your area that had a car?
No, you had to have a car almost to go to even get to town,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then like on the farm like that, you were always having to run and get parts to fix machinery and stuff. My dad, once when they started making pickups, and he had a pickup and we had a family car, because you'd go to town on Saturday night. That was a big thing, to go to town
mm-hmm.
on Saturday night. And it was an entirely different life. My grandkids are always trying to get me to tell that they love to go to Iowa. My family all still live there in the
mm-hmm.
same place. And they're always trying to get me to tell them about more about Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Was there a city nearby, a big city that ever?
Yeah,
liked
Iowa
to?
City, where the college is.
And
right.
Did you ever take, were there streetcars downtown?
No. Not then that I can remember.
Before.
We used to go to Iowa City on Sundays, down to the park.
Mm-hmm.
My mother would fix a picnic lunch, and we'd go down there on Sundays. Then also, one of the first blacktopped roads in Iowa went right by my family's farmhouse. A thing that us kids liked to do on Sunday. We were great roller skaters. We would roller skate to town, 5 miles, skate all around town, and skate back.
A lot of exercise.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever go downtown to go shopping? Was there big department stores?
Oh,
downtown?
Not in this little town,
no.
This was a little country town named Marengo, the same as my street. The
mm-hmm.
street here is named after my hometown in Iowa, because my husband and his father started this addition here. And they liked Iowa so well, they were naming the streets after the little towns in Iowa. So anyway, no, it was a very small town. When you had to do a lot of shopping, you had to go to Cedar Rapids or Iowa City.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't too often. And we used to get such terrible snows in the wintertime out there. They don't get them like we don't. We don't get them here either like
mm-hmm.
we used to. I guess that my dad always had a bobsled, and we used to go to town in that.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't have any luxuries. The great thing was playing game, dominoes and checkers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then my folks had an extra house on the farm that nobody lived in. It was 3 rooms downstairs and 2 upstairs. In fact, it was the house I was born in. And on Saturday nights in the wintertime, the neighbors would come and bring potluck, and we had somebody there to play a piano and a fiddle, as they called them
mm-hmm.
then. And we had square dances on Saturday night in this house. All the neighbors come in, and us, even as little children, we learned to square dance.
Was that during the Depression?
Yeah.
Was that one way to
yeah, that was one way to entertain yourself.
Cheaper.
And sometimes some of the other people would have a square dance at their house on a Saturday night. But they used this vacant house of my folks a lot, because it was just there, you know.
Did you have extra workers on your farm?
We had 2 hired men and a hired lady that lived with us. When we sat down to eat at night, there were 11 people to sit down and
mm-hmm.
eat. So my mother was busy all summer canning vegetables, you know, because we raised everything that we practically ate. And every fall, we'd put away 90 bushel of potatoes in a special place that my dad had. We had like
mm-hmm.
caves and so forth to keep
Solid.
Vegetables all winter. 90 bushel.
That seems like an awful lot.
Yeah.
Kept you through the winter.
Yeah. But those were such good days. Families were so close then.
Yeah.
And we were great in sports. I played basketball. I was a pretty good basketball player.
Did they have sports in high school?
They had sports in high school. In fact, Iowa was one of the few states that used to have basketball tournaments that many years ago.
Hmm.
We went to state several times from my hometown. We had a very good basketball team. And when I come out here, And then after my girls were born, I couldn't understand that they didn't have tournaments for girls
mm-hmm.
and things, because it had been big back there ever since I was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Sports were a big thing.
How about Christmases and holidays? Do you remember those real well?
Oh, yes. Yes. I remember Christmas because my birthday is the day before Christmas. Yeah, we had I can't remember. Well, we didn't ever get very much for Christmas because there just wasn't money then, you know,
mm-hmm.
but we had lots of evergreens on our farm, and my dad used to go out and get one. Now, he would never get it till the afternoon before Christmas, and then we decorated it with these paper rings you used to make and string popcorn
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And if we got, like, maybe one sled, it was for all of us. You know, that would be one big gift, and then we'd generally get maybe one smaller gift. We didn't have any clothes or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You just didn't. If you had two different, when I went to high school, I can remember times were so bad that I had two outfits. I come home, wash one night, and wear the other one the next day, and
mm-hmm.
that was. And families used to hand a lot of clothes down, and you didn't argue like the kids do now.
Right.
I won't wear that. You were so
right.
glad to get it.
Right.
Yeah, it was. You did things that didn't cost much money.
Did you make your own clothes?
Oh, yeah. My mother sewed all the time. Mm-hmm. She used to even make the trousers, the wool slacks. She used to take old coats and cut them up and make
mm-hmm.
the wool slacks and different things, yeah. She had it was a hard life for on the farm.
Mm-hmm. And so your father was a farmer and
mm-hmm.
he was always home or working in the farm?
Always home working in the farm. And I had three brothers and two sisters, and they all worked out, too. And I was the only one to leave home and go somewhere else to work. The rest of them are still farmers back there. But then later on, after the Depression was over, my father became a very successful farmer, and my two brothers have large farms and out there yet. So I go out there a couple times a year.
Mm-hmm. Brings back a lot of memories.
Yeah, because I only have my two daughters and grandchildren here.
Mm-hmm.
My family's still all out there. So, yeah, and, you know, we used to have such big families out there, and now when you're back here and there's just a little family, holidays are not the same as they
mm-hmm.
were there, because you would have, I can remember, we lived in a huge farmhouse, and the table, it just seemed like stretched forever.
Right.
You know,
did you have big long benches that you'd have
on? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I really. My mother was a great cook. But she had to do all the cooking on a wood stove,
mm-hmm.
you know. And we had ice boxes for a long time. We used to put up ice every year. We had a regular ice house
mm-hmm.
where you'd go down to the river and cut ice in the wintertime and pack sawdust around it, and you kept
mm-hmm.
that all summer, and then you had this wooden ice box, and that's how you kept things. Or you had big cisterns that had been wells or something before, and you would hang things down there on strings because it would be cool down there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you would keep things cold. I can remember when we first got a refrigerator. It was a gas refrigerator. I mean, and it wasn't very big. But, you know, sometimes just talking to somebody, you forget about these things till you talk to somebody about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we had a radio. It had three dials on. You had to have a big antenna on the roof, and you had to have earphones to hear it, so only one person could hear. So we would get each one of us to pick out one thing we wanted to listen to, and we'd pass the earphones around.
Did you used to listen to Fireside Chats?
Oh, yes. I'd love to hear President Roosevelt when he was such a good speaker. I was overseas when he died, and I never forget that day, because we knew we had to do a parade
mm-hmm.
when somebody like that would die. You honored him and everything, and we stood all day out there in the hot sun and before the parade took place. I'll never forget that. That was a long, long day. Lived on the farm. Well, of course, my parents, you know the answer to that one. They worked right on the farm.
Mm-hmm. You never lost anything valuable during the Great
Depression? Oh, yeah, we lost all our money.
You never any tractors or cars or...
Oh, you mean people taking them or...
Right, because...
Or not being able to pay for them. My dad didn't buy anything unless he could pay for it. That's what he taught us. He taught us one other thing, that even any kind of a job we had to put 6% in savings, always. And I followed that my whole life. He never believed in buying on... Well, they didn't used to have credit like they do now.
Mm-hmm.
But if he didn't have the money put away, he wouldn't buy it.
So you were fortunate and you didn't lose any...
Exactly. Not like that. He lost the money that was in the banks because each one of us kids had little savings accounts. I'll never forget that. And of course, we didn't have very much in them, but probably $15 or so. But that was a lot of money in those days. And I can remember my dad crying because he had lost all he had. So all six of us kids started crying too because we had lost what we had. You know, and he was renting then, so we didn't lose the home. And he didn't work for the WPA. But he was lucky. He was lucky during the... the rent on this farm was $2,000 a year. That was a lot of money, too. But it was a huge farm. And it was to be paid the last day of the year. And I know my dad was just frantic because he didn't have it. And this gentleman came out from town. And he said, well, I don't want you to worry anymore. He handed him a paid receipt for the $2,000 for that year. Mm-hmm. Didn't take a cent of rent. And that's how my dad got back on his feet, you know, because he didn't have that big debt hanging over him. And he was a wonderful, wonderful man.
Everybody stuck together at that time.
Yeah, right. And the man had money. The older man who owned the farm, they were from quite a wealthy family, and he had the money, so, and he always liked us kids and my mother and dad so well, so he helped us out, and people used to help each other like that, you know. We never would buy, we didn't buy meat in the store either. What happened every February, four neighbors would get together, and they'd spend 1 week at each one of these four farms, and they would butcher like six pigs. That would be your meat for the year. You would can it, you would put it down in brine, you would smoke the hams. We had our own smokehouse. We had more buildings around that farm. Had our own smokehouse. And that way you cured your meat for the year, your bacons and hams. And the kids worked right along with the grown-ups, too. You would sit there and help cut meat up at night to make the sausage and the different things, you know. We had our playtime, but we had lots of work time. So that's why I guess I think life's pretty easy now.
Right.
It's been a good life, though. But anything else you'd like to ask, you go ahead, because I really rambled around. That's going to be hard for you to